I'm someone who loves trying out different makeup looks, but doesn't really wear much on a daily basis, so I like to focus on making sure I have high quality staples. And whether you like a fresh face, full glam, or somewhere in between, you've probably seen Thrive Cosmetics Viral Tubing Mascara. I've certainly seen it everywhere. You know, the one in the turquoise tube? So that mascara, along with all of Thrive Cosmetics' beauty products, are certified 100% vegan and cruelty-free, which I look for in makeup, and they've got excellent quality to match. And something I didn't know from all the mascara videos I've seen is that for every product sold, Thrive Cosmetics donates either that same product, another product that is needed more, or a monetary donation. They've worked with over 500 nonprofits to help with a wide range of causes like supporting cancer survivors, people experiencing homelessness, education access, and so much more. Knowing that makes me feel even better about using their products. And I do enjoy using them. Like I said, I like having high quality staples, and so my favorites are products that are multi-purpose, like the Brilliant Eye Brightener. It comes in a bunch of colors, and I like using them as eyeliner, eyeshadow, and even highlighter. Thrive Cosmetics is luxury beauty that gives back. Right now, you can get an exclusive 20% off your first order at thrivecosmetics.com/thrive. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS, .com/thrive for 20% off your first order. You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales, because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Welcome back to Angel on Top, a podcast where we watch and discuss every episode of Angel, one by one, spoiler-free, and in tandem with no one. Everything has changed. We're all alone. I'm your co-host, LaToya Ferguson, a.k.a. the comatose Chase of the Bufferingverse, a.k.a. one half of the Gun Squad. Your Honor, permission to approach the bench, a.k.a. Gilbert to Morgan Sullivan, a.k.a. Daddy, even if no one can remember that, a.k.a. Captain Forehead, a.k.a. even more annoying new nicknames to come.
And I'm your co-host, Morgan Ludich, a.k.a. the Winifred Burkle of the Bufferingverse, a.k.a. the other half of the Gun Squad. I'm out of order! You're out of order! This whole court's out of order! A.k.a. the Sullivan to LaToya's Gilbert, a.k.a. trying to forget all of the daddy stuff, a.k.a. William Bloody, a.k.a. even more annoying new nicknames to come.
And this week, we're watching Angel Season 5, Episode 6, The Cautionary Tale of Numero Cinco. The Cautionary Tale of Numero Cinco was written and directed by Jeffrey Bell. It aired on the WB on November 5th, 2003.
And this is the one where an ancient Aztec demon returns to Los Angeles, and Team Angel can only save the day with the help of their mailman?
Previously on Angel, no previouslys, but I'm actually fine with that this episode because I think the little bits of numero cinco we got in the two episodes before, which were Conviction and Just Rewards, is so much better than the sprinkling they do with Lorne, which actually does require you to kind of know what's going on. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's like the rule of threes for this one, or Chekhov's gun, because technically this is the third act of seeing numero cinco.
True. Yeah. Well, we're here finally.
We're here.
There's been a lot of hype for the wrestling girls, more specifically you, who know a significant amount about wrestling and wrote a book on it and are an expert, and me, who have been to a couple indie wrestling matches, to talk about the wrestling episode of Angel. What do you think about this one, LaToya?
Yeah, so this is an episode that everyone assumes I love. I do not. I'm a big wrestling fan. Love Lucha Libre. We are going to a Lucha Libre show in a couple months. So I was realizing watching this, so it's wild that this episode was the beginning of November sweeps.
It was?
Yeah.
Wow.
Until you realize that this episode's like reiterating like the Shanshu stuff, like Angel's investment, Spike's investment. Mm-hmm. So there's like actual forward momentum in terms of Angel and Spike's headspace. And I teased you that there's a Supernatural episode I want to compare it to, which is the season one episode Bugs, which is an awful episode. But you also forget that there's a lot about Sam addressing how John Winchester was a shitty fucking dad, and like how Dean would like take John's side, and he thinks that like Sam abandoned their family, and like there's a whole bunch of that like family stuff and like the dynamic and what like what caused all of the like the rift and everything.
Yeah,
and it's in Bugs, an episode like you wouldn't know that's in there because you would skip Bugs.
Yeah. Oh, classic. So this is kind of one of those. Because, yeah, it does, like, stealthily advance our serialized plot here. Yeah. Even though this, I think this case of the week is a little bit
dead. That also has, like, a culture that no one on the writing staff should be writing about. And that's Native Americans and Bugs.
Oh, wow. So a lot of similarities, really.
Yeah, there's, like, it's a Native American burial ground. That's the thing in Bugs.
Ooh, don't do that, don't do that.
They did that.
And I can't believe I'm about to say this thing, which is to say, to open this with saying, Charmed did it better. Their wrestling episode kind of fucking hits. Ron Perlman, baby.
Yeah, and it also wasn't going into the cultural stuff. Don't worry, they would do it a few episodes later with their Wild Wild West episode.
Yeah.
But they just get like like a few wrestlers from WCW and they're good, and like they don't really do anything like in terms of, you know, being characters. And so apparently like I said, Jeffrey Bell, who was technically showrunner for these last two seasons, but you know, Joss stepped in to joss it up. Like this was like kind of his passion project. He wanted to do this, an episode like this, on the X-Files, and then Joss allowed it on Angel.
Oh gosh.
I will say a really funny part is that, you know, those official WB promos, when they show like the internal subtitle, it was Stupido. This is like Carpe Hardem and Carpe Softem.
Oh god, I'm a Carpe Hardem just thinking about Carpe Noctem. this one I like wish it would hit for me, but I was pretty darn underwhelmed by this. Like, it does seem just like a really, like, if you say it's gonna be the wrestling episode, it should have more than like 30 seconds of wrestling.
And here's the thing, wrestling, like Lucha Libre is cool. What these guys are doing
cool as hell.
It's not Lucha Libre or cool. It's like they are becoming a mech of like luchadors.
Yeah, and it feels like, I don't know, it doesn't feel very respectful, like the attempts at like talking about Mexican culture and like luchadors in general. Mm-hmm. Like I can tell they're trying something, but it doesn't feel authentic in like any way. Like it feels very
I have actually
addressed
some cool stuff to say about just like the wrestling coordinating for this. But like one thing to like show how, you know, it doesn't really get, you know, the genre and the culture is that. So, you know, the wrestling scene where Angel is like watching and he takes him there. It's like, look how they, you know, disrespect my brothers and everything like that. Mm-hmm. That was actually filmed at a Lucha Vavoom taping, which is what got my gears going to be like, I've never actually been to Lucha Vavoom. We should go. So, So despite the way number five talks about them, it's actually a badge of honor in Lucha Libre to have like they're called minis, like or mini estrellas, like mini stars. Like it's not like in the 90s and 80s and 90s when like Vince McMahon brought him to WWF. Yeah, there was like a lot of like haha, but that's just because Vince McMahon's a piece of shit. But like in Mexico, no, they're well respected stars. I just went to see New Japan Pro Wrestling this weekend, and the Lucha Libre star Mascara Dorada, who is a great wrestler, but who I loved even more is Mascarita Dorada, which is the mini wrestler. And it was like, this is the rare occasion where the mini wrestler existed first. They made Mascara Dorada because of how popular Mascarita Dorada, the mini wrestler, was.
That like, rules.
Yeah, like usually it's the opposite. It's like, when you're like a popular enough, larger star, then you get your mini wrestler. Yeah, they did the opposite here.
Wow. So what we're like shown in this episode as like a grave insult to Numero Cinco and his family is actually like a normal kind of tribute you would see in Lucha Libre.
Yeah, it's like it's a big honor. It shows like how popular you are, basically, if you have a mini.
Well, that sucks. Like that's a fundamental misunderstanding, which is a bummer.
And yeah, and Numero Cinco in general was based on like the Lucha Libre like legend El Santo, who was like he would do everything with the mask on. He was an actor. He was in films with the mask on. And this is the thing: back in the day, women would sleep with Lucha Libre stars who would like fuck them with their masks on, and like when the guys would like go to the bathroom, they would like look in their wallets to see their IDs to figure out who they were. It's like in that Justice League Unlimited episode where like the Flash and Lex Luthor have switched bodies, so yes. Lex Luthor takes off the mask and it's like, I have no idea who this is.
I don't know who this is.
Yeah, like El Santo, like in Mexico, was like bigger than Hulk Hogan or Stone Cold or, you know, anyone really.
That's so cool. Well, I'm excited to learn about what you're going to teach me in this episode, because I gotta say, I did not come away from this episode having learned a lot.
And the biggest thing, like, I didn't really know before this episode, but I looked into it because I was like, I wanted to know who the wrestling coordinator was, because when, like, you're doing a wrestling episode, you can't just use the actual stunt coordinator. You need a wrestling coordinator because they're going to be bringing in the wrestlers who are taking the actual bumps. Like, when they're showing their matches in the flashback, you'll notice, like, so the ones playing the Number Brothers, they're all actors. They're not really taking any bumps, whereas the ones they're going against are the actual wrestlers. So this was, hold on one second, like in terms of wrestling site coordinating on GLOW and Young Rock, you have Chavo Guerrero, who's like part of the legendary Guerrero wrestling family. And so this was a name I didn't recognize, Ron Rivera. His wrestling name was American Wild Child. And he was also a wrestling coordinator on the Nikki Cox WB show, Nikki, because in that she plays like an aspiring showgirl and her husband plays like a pro wrestler. So they had like a lot of wrestling in that too. And so I was like looking into it. He was a wrestler who showed up in WCW a couple of times in the late 90s, like with a bunch of, he came up in Mexico, so with a bunch of luchadors who would become like big stars in the States, but he was mostly a SoCal wrestling trainer and promoter. He had an indie promotion from like 99 to 2004 here in Southern California, and he kind of bridged the gap between Lucha Libre in Mexico and like the indie wrestling style in SoCal. So like he'd use these shows like to bring in his guys from his promotion and that he trained to be the wrestlers, like Super Dragon, who's basically retired now but like runs PWG. I think he was like the main guy they were fighting in this episode during that flashback match. And like Excalibur, who also like works for PWG and is like now the lead commentator in AEW, which is the number one, like number two promotion after WWE in America. He trains like a lot of SoCal guys. Like his final match in 2010 was a 159 man battle royal that featured so many SoCal indie guys, including ones we've seen, like Pretty Peter Avalon, Ray Rosas. Yeah.
The boys?
Yes, the boys. We got Sexy Jesus in that match.
Wish I could put a dollar bill in that little waistband.
So yeah, he was really pivotal in getting like the kind of the style that we still see now in like SoCal indie wrestling.
That's really cool. And I mean, that's cool that they worked with him. Like I don't have a lot of interesting or smart sounding things to say about the wrestling in this episode, but I'm sure you will. And I look forward to hearing what you have to say. But wrestle fun, wrestle good. I am so grateful for the amount of wrestling that you've brought into my life. And I'm stoked to talk about this app with you.
Yes. And also, just to let you know, the Smallville episode that was paired with Relic, I'd completely forgotten about this episode, but when I looked into it, I'm like, oh yeah, I remember. This was an event. It was promoted as Smallville 1961, directed by Angel director Marita Grabiak. It's a 1961 flashback episode where you have Tom Welling playing Jor-El. Jor-El like had shown up in Smallville in the 60s, and he had a thing with like Lana's great aunt, played by Kristen Kreuk. They were fucking back in the 60s.
The L men, they have a type.
It's Lana Wang.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, and it was like the 50th episode of the show, so like every 50 episodes, like an event, which goes in nicely with like the 50-year thing here. Synergy-ish.
Yeah.
That's how they started Sweeps, which makes sense. Like, yeah, what Jor-El was on Earth, like back in the day, that's how you start your Sweeps in a Superman show. And like Lex like realizes that his dad probably killed like his grandparents, like, and that's like a big arc for the rest of the season. Like, Lex getting to the bottom of that.
Well, in this one, Fred wears a miniskirt. I'm picking up my broom. Sweep, sweep, sweep.
She wears a short skirt. She does wear a long jacket when she's in the lab, in her lab coat. This is what Cake was talking about.
This is. Shall we dive in?
I suppose so.
So we open in this kind of like warehousey place. A security guard is looking around with his flashlight. Doors open.
I'm sorry. I put in my notes. This is one of the many open concept factories in this show.
Classic. We're always in one of these places. He runs into a guy who's working on the plumbing, and it's like, oh, I was scared for a second, but it's just you. And then that guy flies through the air, and our security guard is attacked and stabbed repeatedly.
Okay. So Carlos, which is the plumber, he's just thrown, right? He's not like killed. Mm-hmm. And then Henderson, who is the security, he is killed because he's a hero. They say he was like a military guy, right? Not that he's because he's a security guard, right?
Yes. Later they say he has like a bronze star or something like that.
Yeah, it's like, you know, everyday heroes, security guards.
So over at Wolfram and Hart, we see Numero Cinco himself. He's plodding along with the mail cart.
And then we got the quirky music that tells us this is a fun episode.
Doop, yes.
Doop, doop.
I write in my notes that he has worse posture than mine. And he just looks very downtrodden.
Yeah, I'm like he's more hunched over than he's been in those first two episodes.
Yeah, he's looking real glum. He's dropping off the mail. No one's looking his way, which made me very sad. And then he is approached by Lorne, who asks him for some advice. Sexy soccer mama or brainy beauty? Because he's trying to send a birthday card to an aging starlet. And I write in my notes here, are all the Hollywood jokes about women with expiration dates on this show?
Yeah.
Because that seems to be the case.
Yeah, by a certain point, I'm just, once he goes through it before Fred gets there, I'm like, God, does Lauren just hate women now?
So then Fred shows up and Lauren asks for her advice because she's like a woman.
I'm sorry. And she's looking so hot.
Yeah.
She's like a woman.
She's never been more feminine on this show.
Truly.
Like, what are we talking about? It's so weird to like treat her like Liz
Lemon
in this scene.
I'm assuming Fred in hoodies.
I miss when she was cozy. I miss her braids. But Fred's like, okay. She gives him an answer, which is like, neither. Send flowers just because and tell her she's the best. Also, that's fucking rude. And I write in my notes that we just did an episode where everyone is like, Lorne never judges anyone. He's such a sweetheart. And why it's so shocking to see Big Hulk Lorne come out and be like, I guess he does have a judgmental side. And all I hear him do this season is wittily comment on the misfortune of women in the entertainment industry and how annoying it is to deal with them and how salacious gossip about them is. And it makes me want to sit on a knife.
Well, the lesson he learned is that he should outwardly judge these women all the time now so it doesn't fester.
Great.
I'd love to hear about a shitty man.
Yeah, but Hollywood doesn't have any of those.
Mm-hmm. Of course not. Mm-mm. And of course there's no man that's insecure and just like pumped full of steroids because of it or like had a lot of work done. Mm-mm. No men.
No men. So then
I do like I do like when he's complimenting her and she's just like off in the background and she's like, oh, damn straight.
She's like, yeah, I'm fucking hot. I know it. And I'm like, that's more like it. Numero Cinco doesn't say anything. Wah, wah. Over in Angel's office, Angel is signing a document and the ink is red. And Gunn's like, that's your blood. It's okay, though. And Angel's like, oh, okay. Wait, is it?
Okay. Here's where I get into my thing. Like, Gunn's personality is just different.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't just get the law and it changed nothing like he's saying. Like, for example, mm-hmm. Vinny Gambini, you know, my cousin Vinny. He had the law in his head. Did it change him as a person?
No.
Exactly. But I rarely recognize.
I'm so sorry. You can't bring up my cousin Vinny. You can't just do that.
I was like,
LaToya.
You summoned Kristen.
You did. I'm not coming in. I won't come in for my whole fucking quarter, but you can't just say fucking Vinny and talk about my cousin Vinny and not expect me to roll up in here and be like, hi, my name is Kristen Russo. Would you like to know what I think about my cousin Vinny? It's the best movie that's ever been created. Thank you very much.
And one day you'll show it to me.
Morgan.
Yeah, we've talked about this. Yeah, you're supposed to show it to me.
You still haven't seen it?
Yeah, I must black
it out. Because I've been waiting for Kristen to do a Girls on Film on it with me.
Okay, you know what? Fuck this. Before we hit the fucking spring of 2023, we are launching My Cousin Vinny with you in a Discord channel of some kind, because this is absolutely unacceptable. Yeah, no friend of mine can not have seen
this. Not appropriate.
Yay!
No, it isn't. It's homophobic is how I feel.
We decide this is your punishment for failing us. The punishment you really love.
Okay, I'm going to go think about Marissa Tomei until I'm properly summoned from my corner. Thank you very much. Sorry, LaToya, but now you know. I'm like Beetlejuice. You just have to say, like, you know. Mona Lisa or Vinny three times in a row, and there I am.
Bye, buddy.
Her biological clock is tick, tick, ticking.
And yes, I mean, same for Elle Woods. Just because she became a lawyer doesn't mean that she's not still a Delta Nu.
Exactly. But Gunn, luckily, as the episode continues, I recognize some parts of him, but like...
Yeah.
You can't say nothing's changed.
It's weird, and nobody cares, because, again, everyone's not friends anymore. But anyways, Gunn explains that, you know, with these signatures, what Angel has done is he has bankrupted a company that dumps raw demon waste into Santa Monica Bay. He banished some pyro warlocks to a hell dimension, and he started a foster care program for kids whose parents were killed by vampires, which is nice to see that Gunn's at least doing nice Gunn-like stuff.
Which I put, last one should be something that Gunn's actually into. I also put in my notes, if that doesn't have Anne's fingerprints all over it, I don't know what does.
Yeah. It should feel emotional to him.
But he also says during this that Angel just needs to put his Herbie Hancock there because, you know, white people wrote this. And you know that Twitter thread where it's like all the white phrases that like they need to be brought back?
Oh, okay. I'd love to hear about some of these white phrases that need to return.
But yeah, like Herbie Hancock and John Hancock is definitely one of them. Even though Herbie Hancock is a black man, like only white people say this.
Okay, I love it. I'll start saying it again. So Angel's not so happy, and Gunn's like, I know this isn't the way you're used to doing good, but I fucking love it here. And he makes a joke about Johnny Cochran, because Gunn is both a lawyer and black.
Yeah. Angel clearly is not, he doesn't feel champion-like. That's the theme of this episode. Yeah. Gunn says for the first time in his life, he can't wait to get up and go to work in the morning. And this is where I put it in my notes. So I'm actually curious how much of this is the implant and how much of this is just not having memories of seasons 3 and 4, really.
No clue. I'm like, yeah, I wrote in my notes, Gunn, I know this isn't WB time, but I'm going to need you to check out First Impressions, where we learn all about how you run an entire community that relies on you, and that it's important to you, and that it means things to you, and you mean things to it. Like, it just makes me so mad.
Yeah, and but he also says this, which is, you've always had your special powers, now I have mine. To which, like, okay, so I put, like, this is kind of what Lorne was actually saying last week. Like, that was Lorne's thing, and now apparently it's Gunn's thing. And I'll acknowledge that. But, like, once again, Gunn selling himself short, which is very Gunn.
Yeah.
But I want to talk this one out with you, because I'm like, what do you think?
I mean, in terms of, like, what's canon, I mean, I am in a position where I only have an uncharitable read on this, where I you know, see this as the writers kind of like retconning some stuff and being like, hey, you didn't really like the old Gunn. Now you have this cool, shiny new one. You love this one, right? Like that before thing wasn't working, which I just don't like. Like it feels dismissive of everything this character has been through and everything this character might mean to anyone who watched this show. It just... like I hate how much shitting on Gunn and Gunn's past there has been since we got to Wolfram and Hart.
Much like we like Angel the character, we like Charles Gunn the character too. We like all of these characters.
We do. I just like it sucks to me because also like Gunn should remember just his past where he was, you know, like a community leader. And like, I know that those were hard times when he was like, you know, in charge of everyone and probably not doing very well. And like, you know, we know he sold his soul for a car. Mm-hmm. Like, obviously there is dark stuff that's like not great to look at, like with those, not great to think back on in that time. But isn't he proud of what he built? Doesn't that mean stuff to him? Like, it's also so weird.
I mean, it's also part of something we've talked a lot about too. It's like the show having Gunn kind of back off of the fact that he's like a leader too.
Yeah.
And again, we're talking about the marking of his territory and life of the party and that not really being focused, but I feel like it could be focused in terms of, again, he's a leader. And
he is.
And really, he's kind of just following with this whole implant. And it's one thing to be like, okay, Gunn really appreciates the legalese and everything, but I'm like, why? If it's like, maybe he's like, this is a puzzle I could never have solved before, but now I can. And I think that's interesting. I don't get why he's about the law.
Yeah.
Other than they put it in his brain.
Put it in his brain and they're evil and they want him to like it. Yeah, I agree. Like, I wish there was a little more, like, rationale explained. But we're just supposed to believe it because we're supposed to be like, yeah, this is way better than, like, back in the day. And I strongly disagree. Like, I've loved Gunn always and have always thought that, like, the things that he brought to the show are valid and important. And I think we're really also in this post... is it My Old Gang or That Gang of Mine? That Gang of Mine world where I think they kind of were just like, you know, I think the lesson of that episode for all of them was like, you know, maybe we just shouldn't anymore, which is, you know, not necessarily the wrong thing for them to take away from that episode, given that, like, clearly they weren't equipped to tell those stories. But, like, that stuff should still matter to Gunn and can still matter. And I think portraying him as a person who would, like, turn his back on this, like, community he created has never sat right with me ever. And this feels like just another, like, further step in that direction. Mm-hmm. To step away from, like, guns like blackness and like his himselfness, which just sucks.
And also, I will correct myself again. It is that old gang of mine. Don't worry, everyone. But also, it's like, you know what the thing is with this change now. You know how much people would be like, the characters would be like, well, Gunn and Fred don't make sense because, you know, they're not like intellectually on the same level. Now they are. And I don't see anyone being like, you know, you and Fred should give it another go.
Yeah.
Ugh, you're equals now. Equals!
Equals!
Even though they were already emotionally equals.
They were. It just, like, it sucks and it leaves a bad taste in my mouth. And I know there's a lot of different reads on it, and there's a lot of ways we can justify it based on, like, everyone forgetting a bunch of stuff and what does everyone remember, yada, yada, yada. But I just really don't like it. It doesn't feel right to me. And I know that, like, I'm loving watching J. August Richards, like, do stuff that I think he feels, like, a little bit more comfortable with. Like, he's so fun with, like, the courtroom patter and being able to, like, rattle off all the legalese. It's fun to watch him do. He's really good at it. I just wish they had taken the step to be like, I like this because, and not because before me never ever felt fulfilled, and now I am smart and good.
I mean, yeah, if you say he was the way he was because of circumstance, but, like, truly, Angel's whole thing is that what we do matters, and for Gunn to be like, that was terrible before, this is good now, I'm like, because he keeps being the one who's like, we're doing so much good. And I even, like, I think it is in the scene where I put my notes, it's like, yeah, you're doing so much good now that you, like, technically more than what you would have done at Angel Investigations. But the thing is, like, originally, like, before, there was the personalization of it all. That's why in Provider, they're doing it the wrong way, because there's no personalization. It's like, for as much as I don't like Nina the Wolf or Unleashed, it's like, that at least had that, like, that connection. Yeah. And that's, like, that's kind of what Angel's whole deal is. And, like, that is in this episode, too, with Angel and Number 5.
Yeah, like, it matters. Like, his soul is being rehabilitated by doing this. And the Wolfram and Hart work is not good for anyone's soul.
Gunn's saying basically that, like, they barely left the dead. It's like, no, like, the little things matter. That's, like, Angel's whole point.
Yeah. It's a bummer to see our gang kind of have lost their way. Spike is here. He's bitching about...
It seems like Wes is finding his way.
Yeah, Wes is doing great. Spike's bitching about how he's like, hey, trade powers with Spike, me. You can lift a mug.
Spike, who's here, not invited, as usual. Like, Spike, you can go, like, watch other people.
You can go watch TV.
Yeah, I'm sure Passions is on.
You tell me Passions isn't on somewhere.
There has to be an empty office he can have.
Yeah, give it to him.
Give him the empty office.
Please. So Angel's unhappy. Gunn is like, I get that you hate it, but in-house attacks are down 30%. And we've done, you know, more good in a month here than Angel Investigations could do in a year.
I'm sorry. In-house attacks are down 30% this week. I'm like, I want to see a montage of the murder attempts on Team Angel.
Please.
Like, do-do-do. We're just walking through the office. And then, like, suddenly someone, like, charges at Fred with a knife. And then he's like, tackled by Angel.
I would like that, please.
That's what we should be doing with our time.
So Angel says he's been, like, feeling disconnected lately, and Spike is so pissed. He's like, you have everything you fucking want. Like, you're living the high life and you're feeling disconnected. Is baby sad? Like,
I'm a ghost. Like, I'm really disconnected. Which, this reaction, again, makes more sense to me than the early jealousy for, like, him having all those things did.
Yes. And
if we could just erase, like, that stuff that, like, really, like, upset me, like, because it was hellbound, right, where, like, Spike started being, like, normal. I'm like, okay, this is what I understand.
Steve and
this episode also has him, like, being useful and, like, showing what his use to the group is, too.
Yeah. He like, yeah, this is a pretty good spike up. Yeah. Even though it's very minimal. So Numero Cinco walks in and nobody acknowledges him. And I'm like, you guys are fucking dicks.
Yeah. Gunn does say he does mix it up sometimes and get his hands dirty. And then he later does wearing a suit. You don't have a change of clothes for going out in the field. Gunn, like, come on.
Come on, dude. And yeah. Wes comes in. He's got a case. People are getting their hearts cut out in L.A.
East L.A., because that's where the Latinos live. You know, if it was West L.A., those'd be, you know, or South L.A., sorry. That's where Gunn's people are.
Of course.
West L.A. are where the rich white people are.
Now I understand.
C. Word.
And C and word.
Yes, the language of my people. Word.
I know that makes you feel more comfortable if I speak that way. Numero Cinco missed an envelope, so Angel chases him down and is like, hey, and he grabs him by the shoulder rather roughly when he like doesn't notice or hear him, and he's like trying to give him the envelope, and this guy rightfully throws Angel through a fucking window.
Rightfully?
Yeah.
Jesus.
Don't, if my boss is manhandling me, I'm gonna throw him through a window.
Okay. Classic Morgan Lutich. She is Listen, very fighty.
I do like to fight.
Yeah, and Angel says, I really hate this place.
I felt bad for
him. Yeah, and this was like a long ass first act. It's like apparently like the longest first act of the series.
Oh, really? Wow.
There might be like a longer one later, but like this is like, this had the honor.
It did feel long. Yeah. So we got titles. We're back. We're in a Wolfram and Hart hallway. Spike loves that Angel was thrown. It's very funny.
Spike loves spreading rumors, and the rumors spread so fast. They're talking about him in the chatty rooms.
He's such a gossipy little bitch. I love it. Angel tries to make excuses.
Spike brings up number 5 being like 100 years old. I'm like, so are you, dude.
Yeah. old
Gunn man. Immediately snitches security. Like, shut up.
I know. I'm like, Gunn, what the
fucking
hell?
Narc.
Yeah. So Angel's trying to make excuses for Numero Cinco, and Gunn's like, no, we have to handle this now. We can't have someone here who wants to hurt you. Security is taking him off the premises. And I'm like, okay, narc.
Hey, Fred, did you hear Angel attack the old male guy?
Very good shit. Like, Spike cannot stop telling everybody. Lauren is like, yeah, don't worry. The news is spreading online, but I'm spinning it to make you look very scary. And then Wes comes in. We've got a fourth body.
Yeah. So not to be like he didn't do it. It's like, I heard you sucker punch the old guy. We'll make it seem like you just beat the shit out of an innocent old man. That way evil knows to fear you.
Great stuff. So this new body showed up.
They bring up Wesley's bodies, and Fred says Wesley has bodies. Like, Fred, do you believe that Wesley could possibly be a serial killer? I'm worried if that's how Fred sees Wesley.
He was really creepy to her in season 3.
Does she remember any of that?
I don't know. Maybe deep, like, sense memory.
Yeah, there's a fourth body. It happened during an All Souls Mass, which is prayers for the departed. I'm like, Irish Catholics have that too, Angel. You should know this.
Yeah.
But it's specifically tied to Mexican Day of the Dead.
Mm-hmm.
Dia de los Muertos.
No, Dia de los Muertos is November 1st, right?
Yes, but this episode couldn't air until, the 5th or 3rd? Yeah, 5th,
yeah, so I'm like, is this the day after Life of the Party then?
Yes.
What is this, season 4?
They're all hungover. That would be actually really funny if they're all like still hungover.
I wish Fred would
Lauren should
like,
still be
up.
Asleep.
Yes. Rest, my baby boy. Then in the car, Spike is joining in on them. He likes to watch them, quote, stumble along playing Agatha Christie.
I just say, just sit where he's sitting. He's a ghost.
Yeah. And he called shotgun, so he gets to sit in the front. And Angel pulls the car over wildly. We are at the open concept warehouse.
Here is like here's the one thing where I'll be like, here's our weird exposition of the episode. Spike's in charge of expositing. He brings up Angel always being a drama queen, Angel and the smell of blood, how vampires can always tell with blood. Those are our big hits in terms of expositing.
Yeah. And so he smelled the blood, and we found a dude with his heart ripped out. Wes confirms via forensics the blood spatter. It tells him that the heart was still beating when it was removed. And I'm like, you no. No.
He's an expert on pregnancy, on forensics.
He's Dexter. wild. And then we get into a big fight because the monster attacks us.
Yeah. Morgan, yeah. What do you think of this demon that can clearly only be in the dark because he will look awful in the light?
I did not like the look of this gentleman. I was not a fan. This was not spooky like I wanted.
I was like, he looks awful. He has to be in the dark. And also the fight choreo sucks.
Because Wes shooting him repeatedly, he's only shooting him in the chest plate, which the bullets have already proven to bounce off of. There are many parts of him that aren't covered by armor that you could shoot, Wes.
I feel like
going bananas.
The only cool part of the fight is when it hits Wes and he goes flying.
Yeah.
That's cool. But yeah, it's not. And this is before we get into the elaborate choreography. And it's not great.
It's just not hitting. Guns. Which is,
it's crazy. I was going ahead in season two of the originals, and even more than season one, they really got their fight choreo on lock. And I was like, oh, this is good. Vampire Diaries never even did that.
They were like, that's not our strength.
We just rip out hearts and snap necks.
We're here to quip, baby, and we're here to look good doing it. My favorite beat of this fight is probably Spike trying to pick up the wooden plank to hit him with, and he just can't do it, and he's really mad at himself. And I was like, buddy.
I mean, picking up a 2x4, that's a staple of a wrestling match.
Yeah.
He was like, I actually respect pro wrestling.
Yeah, throw someone through a door and then maybe we'll talk.
Oh, not the doors.
Then at the lab, all they have to go on for, finding this demon is a little bit of gunk on Gunn's axe. Fred will analyze it. Spike's here. He's trying to stay as far away from Angel as he can. He's very grumpy.
General grumpy pants. And Fred, as Angel gets like that sometimes. I mean, Spike would know. But I guess really he mostly knows that in his evil form. So it's different. This is brooding, not just I'm a little piece of shit who wants to snap at you for, killing a bunch of people probably. When we were trying to stay low. She says, he gets that sometimes it's not easy being a champion. You know that. And he says, really don't. And then I'm like, oh yeah, they don't really say the C word over on the B word.
They don't. So it's kind of like a new thing. And Spike's like, I don't see myself that way. And she's like, but you saved the world? In the Buffy finale? And he's like, oh, thank you so much for watching the Buffy finale. I just stood there and watched the fire take me. Nothing I did was brave. And then she said, what about when you saved me?
She says, oh, I didn't watch the finale. I actually read a recap on Television Without Pity.
No. So I only listened to the buffering episode about it.
Morgan and LaToya, they're so funny.
They're so funny. Fred would think we're funny.
I want to be their best friend.
I miss Fred. I miss the Fred that I know and love. It's nice. And Spike's kind of starting to get, I think, a little bashful about it, about the idea that maybe he's not so bad after all. Then in Wes's office, it looks like he's telling a sketch artist what to do or something. He's like,
I think it's like looking up
predatory bird meets a demonic gladiator.
Looking through image references, basically. I don't know if it's sketch artist, but
yeah. So then we're looking at Mesoamerican texts because of the the Day of the Dead connection.
Yeah, and this is the scene where I realized the boys, oh, they're all so beat to shit, even Angel.
Yeah. They're all looking pretty worse for wear. They haven't found anything yet. Angel is being very weird. He's like, I'll be in my office. Yeah.
It's like a classic Angel scene where he's like, they're all working in the Hyperion lobby and he's being weird.
Yeah. And he's like, I'm sorry, I have to be weird right now.
Yeah.
And I wish I could have that excuse at work. Like, Angel honestly has it really good.
If you just stood in a doorway.
Sorry, I'm gonna be weird.
You just stood in a doorway and be weird, the Angel special.
Classic. So Spike shows up. He's asking about Wes's books. He's interested in the prophecies book.
Yeah.
Wants to learn more about the Shanshu thing.
Yeah, and then Wes says it's a bit more complicated than what Spike says, which is Angel will become a real boy again. Mm-hmm. And so Wes is like, it tells of an epic apocalyptic battle and a vampire with a soul who plays a major role in that battle. And there is a suggestion that the vampire will get to live again. Spike's like, you know, closing the Hellmouth, does that kind of count? I mean, if it was mm-hmm. that, you probably would, you know, be alive again. But
yeah.
And it's not, then realizes it's not specific about which vampire with a soul. But then Wes is like, yeah, the vampire with a soul is not a fucking ghost. Nerd. And this is where Spike says it's a bunch of nonsense. It's a bedtime story to get vampires to play nice. And this is where I'm like, reminder, the Shanshu prophecy does not say good or evil on what side they are, which is what Wolverine and Hart's whole reason was for toying with Angel in the first place. They wanted him on their side. It's like, the actual words from the Shanshu prophecy are like, the vampire with a soul will fulfill his destiny. Then he will Shanshu. So it could be good or bad. His destiny could be like to massacre a bunch of people. I don't know.
Yeah, the father could kill the son.
Yeah.
And so Spike's like, I don't believe in that shit, and neither does Angel. And that seems to kind of like fuck Wes up a little bit.
Yeah, it's like, I'm just saying what Angel says. Like, this is from their conversation in Hellbound, which you were bummed about. And I'm like, I feel like he's just, you know, coping. And I was like, prophecy. Angel keeps saying, you know, they're not real, but like, they are.
They are.
The thing is, it actually was happening.
Yeah, like, again, he like acts like a prophecy that did come true was ridiculous. Even later though it was this episode, and I'm like,
it's crazy because it was a fake prophecy, but it did happen.
Yeah.
And again, like I keep mentioning, even if you don't want to talk about Sajan's prophecy, unless you're a Christian, of course, because she's in love with Sajan. Again, really the little secret. Burger.
Me and Sajan.
Yeah, of course. The big burger thing.
The boy
again said, you know, the vampire will devour his child, which was the blood thing that Wolverine Hart did. Like, it did happen.
It happened. Then in Angel's office, we learn the demon is.
Oh, wait.
Ted's cattle?
I can say it, but also let's go back real quick.
Oh, yeah, please.
So I think it's interesting to see Wes's reaction to what Spike's saying, because, like, it can be interpreted as him being worried about Angel and Angel giving up on the mission, which we do see here. But it could also be like some residual feeling, like he left the stove on, like that sensation Skip was talking about in Birthday. Because like, considering how the prophecy ruined his life and friendships, like, and that's all gone. Like, presumably, they had the deterioration of their relationship with Wes, but they don't know
why.
Yeah. There is like a missing, like there's a gap.
Yeah, there's and something missing there.
Alexis really plays a lot of beats in this episode, kind of like it could be this or that. Again, like when Angel brings up the father will kill the son, and obviously he has no idea what that is, but it's like like a lingering thing.
Something.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch. And organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm. As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
So good. So then we're in Angel's office. We learn the demon is
Tezcatl. You could say Tezcatl if you want. It's like Tez. It'd be like Tezcatl.
This Tezcatl was here 50 years ago to the day. And there are some key pictographs missing from the information they have.
I'm guessing those are the brothers.
Yeah, I would guess. Last time it killed over a dozen people before being defeated by five heroes who were brothers and who all died except for one.
And also, so later, we're talking about like how no one cared because it's like a bunch of Mexican people. And that's like, that's why it was like over a dozen last time, because especially then, like no one was going to care that a bunch of brown people were getting murdered.
Yeah. Which is something that like I appreciate the show like putting in there and like saying it, but it just doesn't seem like a particularly rich telling of a story about like another culture.
Well, it's interesting because and I can't believe I forgot this in all of my notes. So like this was Jeffrey Bell's like dream project and everything. But actually, Diego Gutierrez, who was Joss's assistant and wrote the episode Normal Again on Buffy. So he went on to like work with Robert Rodriguez and like he was like executive producer on like the El Rey from Dusk Till Dawn show. And he was also a producer along with Robert Rodriguez on Lucha Underground on El Rey, which I will make you watch Lucha Underground with me one day. So Lucha Underground's like thing was like it was a whole like it was a weekly serialized wrestling show where it was basically like wrestling taking place like in a Mortal Kombat-esque world, and you had wrestlers representing different Aztec tribes, and and like it was like an underground wrestling promotion ran by this man Dario Cueto, who was like he wasn't a wrestler, like he was an actor they hired to play the character Dario Cueto, and he was like really good. And his thing, all he cared about was violence and money. And so, it fucking ruled. So literally, you'd have like stories and like vignettes, like film cinematic vignettes in between matches. Like
that's so fucking cool.
Yeah, and it had a lot of like Lucha Libre stars and like you know people who were like wrestle now in like New Japan and like WWE who were like wearing masks when they were in Lucha Underground. So
cool.
Yeah, it was like really it mixed a bunch of like you have like Lucha Libre stars and legends like from Mexico, mixing them with like, you know, indie stars of today. And and that men and women rules. Mixed it up. So like there was no splitting of the divisions either too. So
yeah. Oh, like, that rules.
And yeah, like Diego Gutierrez, who's actually, when they're in the cemetery, one of the gravestones does say Diego Gutierrez on it too.
Oh yeah. Okay, cool. All right.
So yeah, he produced that along with Rodriguez and also Mark Burnett. So,
hell yeah. Okay.
And it's like, it was clearly like very expensive to make, and unfortunately, because it was on LRA, it was like it was not getting the ratings. But like, yeah, I would love to watch some episodes with you, because it's
would be
like
down as hell.
It fucking rules.
Yeah, that sounds cool as heck. Yeah, I want to do that. Angel is like, can we talk to that remaining brother? Do we have his number? And Wes is like, we do. Wink, wink. You're never gonna believe this.
And then so Angel goes to his apartment, and it's number 5. And I say, mm-hmm. Isn't this just the Hyperion? I would know that hall lighting fixture anywhere, especially with Angel in the damn doorway. That's mm-hmm. the Hyperion.
So I guess they kept like a slice of the Hyperion.
Or they like went to like whatever location they would go to when they would like do like the hallway shots and stuff. Yeah.
Oh, maybe. Yeah. And so Angel seems surprised to see Numero Cinco.
Did they not tell him?
I'm like, did Wes not tell you? It's very weird. Angel says, hi. And Numero Cinco throws him against the wall.
So either he's invited in, or like we never get confirmation if Numero Cinco's like human or not.
Yeah, it's unclear. Numero Cinco explains he threw Angel through the window because he thought he was going to get him involved in this Aztec demon stuff. And Angel's like, no, I was going to give you the mail. Oh.
But now he's dragging him into it.
I liked that joke.
Yeah, that was a good one.
So Numero Cinco's like, I'm retired. I wear the mask to remind myself that only a fool would become a champion. Seems like Angel and this guy have a little bit in common. So he says he and his brothers were Los Hermanos Numeros. The number brothers.
I gotta say, Boreanaz is good in this.
Yeah. And they were like a troop of
number 5 stars. Backhands him.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
So here's where we go to our flashback, and we see the episode's like one big wrestling match. Mm-hmm. It's a tag team between a tag team with 5 people and a tag team with 3 people, which I've never seen
before. It's a 5-on-3 handicap match. I don't know why that's fair. Maybe it was a 10-man tag and it's like elimination. So maybe they've eliminated 2. Let's say that.
Yeah,
that makes sense at least.
Yeah. What do you want to tell me about this action sequence? How did you feel about it?
I was pointing out like, the three person team, like they're the ones all taking like the bumps, like they're taking like the hip tosses and everything onto the mat. Mm-hmm. Those are the actual wrestlers. I was watching a video from like one of, I think it was the person who was playing. Well, they apparently play a referee all the time on Nikki. I can't remember if they were a referee here or they were one of the masked wrestlers. I think they were one of the masked wrestlers. And he was saying how the actors were amazed, like Boreanaz and them, because like they would be like, you know, just to show them what they're going to do. Like they'll be taking bumps like on the ground, pretty much be like, what's wrong with you? Like there's usually like a pad when we do our, if we do our stunts, even the stuntmen. But yeah, there's no pads when it's wrestling in a wrestling ring. Yeah. You got some padding over all of the wood.
Yeah. Oh gosh. This is like wrestling, everyone.
Not even an inch like of the padding and then wood.
Yeah, it's not enough.
It's not. It should just be a mattress.
Please.
So I was saying before, I think this is the one main guy who they're fighting, I think, is Super Dragon. And I was like, I can't remember ever seeing Super Dragon like this thin and small. Yeah, because he got a knee injury that like he ended up getting weight like it was during Nikki, like they had him do a move called the Phoenix Splash, which is like this big top rope twist thing, and they made him do it multiple times for like, you know, so they choose the best take
to get the shot,
and he ended up fucking up his knee doing that.
That's a bummer.
Yeah.
In our fight, the 5 win. In the narration, Numero Cinco explains children worshipped them, women loved them, men wanted to be them.
Yeah, and I'm like,
they never lost, never quit, never compromised.
That's the El Santo of it all, like they're just being like the local hero. And it's like, okay, so they never lost, never quit, never compromised. I'm like, so wrestling's real here, correct? Yeah.
I guess, yes.
Yeah, there are no jokes in this episode about wrestling being fake. There are, like, yeah.
So at least wrestling is real. I like that.
Just like in real life.
Just like in real life. It's not all their battles were in the ring. And we see some dude in the audience spring up with a gun to start shooting at them.
Okay, so then this is where they begin their, we do a mech thing. And then we flip a guy. And I was like, oh, is that how the first one died? Literally, he's just flying into the crowd with a gun's like cocked, and I'm like, free frame. Like, so he got shot in the chest, right?
And died? Yeah.
So apparently
they
not.
A Voltron together. Very weird. In present day, it's explained, you know, they were more than wrestlers. They were like vigilantes protecting the Chicano community in Los Angeles. They helped the helpless. The idea being that, like, we talked about earlier in this episode, it wasn't like, you know, the LAPD was going to do anything about violence against, like, the Latinx community.
It's like,
so
how
it had to be the community.
Gunn did with his crew. But now, instead of getting episodes about Gunn and his old crew, we get with randos, like, number five.
Yeah. So Age was like, I know a little something about helping the helpless.
Yeah.
You know?
And the fighting monsters and gangsters and vampiros, that's kind of like a play on, like, El Santo. He had movies where he fought these things, basically.
Cool.
Him versus vampires, him versus monsters, gangsters. Yeah.
Hell yeah. So in another flashback, we're at a bar. We see the brothers are playing cards. They all always wore their masks because they had to be ready for action at a moment's notice. And they get a call on their special hotline phone. And it turns out the devil has built a robot.
I've heard.
How do you feel about this joke? Like,
I don't love it as much as a lot of people do. I know it's like a beloved joke. What's it called again? Diablo Robotica or whatever?
Yeah.
Like, it's no Miss Kitty Fantastico, you know?
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, it just, to me, it seems like it's, like, making fun of, like Mexican B-movies and, like, stuff like that, rather than, like, feeling celebratory or, like, in on the joke as much.
I don't know about that, because I'm like, it could be also a pitch, like, Bad Horse, where it's like, okay, so here, this is the only time we'll allow this to be part of the episode.
Built a robot. Yeah. So in present day, he's like, surely you've heard about our great victory over the devil's robot, which I find much funnier than the devil's built a robot. And Angel's like, I'm sorry. I hadn't.
He must have been eating rats during that time.
Yeah. He was in his rat chomping phase. So,
or actually, no, was he in his, have you ever been phase actually?
Ooh, even grimmer in some ways.
Yeah, he was not interacting with the world.
Mm-mm. So Angel's like, but I want to know more about this Aztec warrior. And Numericenco doesn't like to talk about this. After his brothers died, he tried to keep the cause going, but eventually, you know, the calls stopped coming. And someone from Wolfram and Hart approached him, said they needed muscle.
Yes, a young Holland Manners when he was an associate.
We don't see his face.
It's on his card. He's on his card with a typo.
Yeah. And he said he took this job because nothing mattered.
Yeah, so they needed a job, they needed a muscle. So, like, when did he transition to the mailroom?
Yeah.
I think he was, like, doing wet work before.
Yeah. So he has an altar for his brothers, and he's like, I prepare this every year, and they never visit because I'm unworthy.
He could still be doing wet work. He threw Angel through that window.
Yeah, that's not easy. And Angel's like, I get it. You got stuck with the hard part, the carrying on. No wonder, like, your brothers don't visit. You've quit on yourself.
Yeah, like, you got stuck with the hard part, the carrying on. I'm like, this is what he would, like, tell Faith. Like, you should be lucky, number five, he cares to tell you, like, to get your shit together.
He doesn't do this with everyone, dude.
Yeah, he should have done this to Nina. She was a little quitter.
Yeah. So he's
just
like,
just let me die. Just let them eat me.
Nina? What will I tell your blonde niece?
Nina?
Nina, I'm coming upstairs.
A new Justine has entered the chat.
Stare.
So it's like, if Joni wasn't about to have a baby, I would make her make a Nina jingle for us. That's how much Nina has been just absolutely beholden to my heart.
Makes me laugh.
Nina?
But why did he quit? And then this is where we go to the ring and we see the parody with like the minis like doing the big fight, which is like the way his brothers died. And we're supposed to see this as like a parody and an insult, and, you know, which sucks given that that's not the context that would normally be in.
You saw how like packed that crowd is. You wouldn't like pack a crowd with like shitty comedy wrestling like that. Comedy wrestling, yeah. Good, yes, but like it has to be like
fun
or like athletically impressive, and that was not. No one's going to like a show like that in LA with like it was sucks no, that no, much.
No. Yeah. So Angel tells Numerosenko, like, you just expect too much of other people. And he's like, I just don't know why we bothered if this thing's just going to be back.
Then we get a rare good Angel speech, which of course number five leaves during.
Yeah. He's like, you know, we lives were saved and it was the right thing to do. We do it because we can, because we know how, whether people remember it or not, or if there's a medal at the end of the day. And he's like, you know, part of you's got to believe in still being a hero. And then he looks over and Numerosenko is gone.
Boo.
Wah, wah. So then in Wes's office, they're talking about the lady from the All Souls Mass who died is the most puzzling of the victims. The demon passed like 20 people to get to her. Why her specifically? Doesn't make sense. And Wes asks Gunn, does Angel seem okay to you?
So like it really sucks. Like it's like when we learn if she like worked with like former gang members and stuff, like it they really lost some people who like were helpful. Like real like human level champions. Like that fucking sucks.
It's really awful. So this is where Wes asks Gunn about Angel, and Gunn's like, yeah, he mentioned he was feeling pretty disconnected. And they start going through the victims. The guy in the alley was a vet. There is a thread between these victims. They're all heroes. This thing wants the hearts of heroes.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have a lead. Back on the streets, Angel leaves and he sees Numerosenko's taking the bus home. He's like, oh, man. He's attacked by the Aztec demon who stabs him in the guts and then like impales him and seemingly are like, he's going to take our champion's heart. Oh, no. Oh, no.
And
he just leaves him there. He doesn't want it.
Maybe it's just because I've seen the show. Mm-hmm. But like I feel like Angel should like immediately realize, yes, Angel, you're a hero. And I know he's in his feelings right now, but it's like, mm-hmm. but you're dead. Your heart is useless. Like, yeah. I don't appreciate them all calling it shriveled up. How dare you? Mean. But like, your heart is useless for these kind of things.
Yeah. It's not going to, you know, sustain him.
Yeah. It's not going to kickstart anything.
Yeah.
Maybe if Gwen was around. Winky, winky.
It's just like Angel's just stuck there like, oh, why didn't he want it? Then in the Wolfram and Hart lobby, Angel's like, boys, your theory fell through in the field. The demon didn't want my heart.
Angel, you like, know better than this. Come on.
Gunn and Wes are like, yeah, your heart's dead, dummy.
And then Wes says more nicely, he wanted the heart for the meat, not the metaphor.
Yeah. And they're like, have you learned anything? And all Angel learned was about the devil's robot, which Wes has heard of. So
poor Angel.
It's getting there somewhere. He's
nobody
like,
tells him nothing.
Then Gunn is like, I'm going to go look in contracts to see if the demon is like back due to some kind of deal that he made. Mm-hmm. So
the whole 50 years thing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Then we get this Wes and Angel scene.
And then more heart talk, because Wes wants a heart to heart with Angel because he says his heart's not in the work. A lot of heart stuff.
Yeah, a lot of heart going on.
To quote Carly Rae Jepsen, your heart is a muscle.
So true. She was so right when she said it.
Yeah.
So he's like, it's not that your heart is dead. It's that your heart isn't in the work. You lost the hope that this work has meaning for you. Yeah. Spike told me you don't even believe in the Shanshu anymore. What the heck, buddy?
And then Angel says, of course not. Prophecies are nonsense. You know that. Wes is like, huh? Mm-hmm. He's like, come on. The father will cure the son. You know. Nope, he does not.
I read in my notes in all caps, bitch, you did devour your son. You drank his fucking blood. Prophecies mm-hmm. are real as fuck.
But also, even if you're just saying killed, the kaboom. There was a kaboom.
Yeah. So Wes tells Angel nothing matters more than his belief in this prophecy. The hope sustains him. It keeps him from ending up like Numero Cinco.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't think Angel really agrees right now.
Luckily, yeah, Fred's got something. So that's the end of the conversation.
Yep.
But Wes is determined. And again, now Angel's saying weird things.
Yeah. But it's also just like nice to see at least Wes is like still being like a good friend. Like this, I know it's about the cause, I guess. Does this count as being a good friend?
I think this does. I think he's genuinely worried about Angel. It's like he lost hope. Like, I mean, they're all in the mission because they believe in Angel, too. And, like, if he doesn't believe in himself, like, what's the point, really?
Fair.
But also, speaking of good friends, is it possibly time for a corner?
Ooh.
You like that? Like how I did that?
I loved it.
Kristen's corner, it's all Riley Dotson, what the fuck, at 40 is hot.
Are you suggesting that I am your friend?
Yeah, I am your freak bitch.
Well, you're not our nemesis anymore.
I know. The other day on social media, I made a made a post about us, and I called you my nemesis just out of sheer habit.
Mm-hmm. And everyone was like, not canon.
Hi, guys.
Hello. Hi, buddy.
Hello, Joyce.
I can't believe that we're here in the same space at the same time for once. Isn't it lovely?
It's wild.
It's been so long.
So you disagree with my take that Sarah Michelle Gellar is maybe not, at least not the top of the list of Scream Queens that didn't go over well?
Have you seen I Know What You Did Last Summer, my friend?
To be quite honest, I have not rewatched it super recently.
How about...
So,
Scream 2.
I've seen Scream 2, and it's a good, it's a fine Scream. It's, but it's not on my top. It's not on my top, okay?
I would say she has to be at the top.
She is a queen. She's
put some respect on her name.
All the, are you kidding me right now?
Are you kidding me?
Are you kidding me?
Someone's being
kid. Are you kidding me?
And you liked my story about drinking water and hating it. Cool, cool, cool.
Yes. That's amazing.
Hi. Do you have any questions for me, or I'm just here to talk about my feelings?
Talk about your feelings.
Yeah, how are you feeling?
Tell
about
us your
this
feelings
season so far. I feel like, you know, we've been missing out on it for
you
a
know,
while.
Something happened this episode, which I feel like you gave a little bit of space to, and I don't mean to put words in your mouth, but I feel like Spike started to gel for me a little bit in this episode in a way that like hasn't been happening. Because he like his comedy and like the way that he was making fun of Angel just felt like it was landing more than it has landed for me this season. So
you're not like, I have to defend Angel with my life.
Also, in addition to, well, this is not about this season, but I was saying to this, I was saying to you both before we started recording tonight that I just watched Amends. LaToya, you were there for that. We all watched Amends together.
I was.
And watching it.
Morgan was kind of there.
I popped in, but I was selling sweaters.
Just, it's just a hobby Morgan has.
She
just selling sweaters on the side of the road.
Selling sweaters.
My
she has an Etsy store, actually.
I wish.
But it's just, I don't know. Seeing Angel in what? Amends is 97, 98, 98. Mm-hmm. We're in, where are we now? 2003?
Three.
Mm-hmm. I'm just tired on behalf of Angel that he is still battling this battle. It's not the same battle. Like Amends to his questions here are not the same. But I guess I just wish for Angel that maybe he could take a nap. You know, like maybe he, maybe he doesn't have, like, here's a, I know it would ruin the show, you guys, but maybe he doesn't need to help the helpless right now.
He needs to help himself.
To help himself. You know, like maybe he just needs a minute for Angel.
I think let's put him in the coma and wake Cordy.
Yeah. He deserves a coma.
Let him take
a nap. I guess
he
got some time at the bottom of the ocean. I forgot about that. So maybe he did have a little bit of a nap. But
No, he just kept having dreams about like a perfect family, and then they were ruined because he'd wake up again.
Because he saw his son drinking milk out of a wine glass. It's just a lot of guilt for one
vampire. You know, like it's a lot of years of guilt. And like, I know he did really bad things, but I think I'm just wondering if Angel is ever going to be a righteous man. You know what I mean? Like, is it ever going to get there for him?
Yeah, it's hard. Like, but I mean, I think I do like that he's a character who has this one issue that he's constantly like, can I be worth it after all of the shit that I've done and after how terrible and shitty this world is? Can I do my part to help it out a little bit? And can I matter? And can I justify my own existence to myself? Is always such a question he has for himself. And I mean, like, as a person with low self-esteem, I ask this question to myself all the time. I find it very relatable.
No, totally, totally. And I get it from the vantage point of he's a guy who's done a lot of bad shit and what have you. But the whole purpose of like the whole thing he's saying in this episode, right, is like, you do the things, you're doing the good things to do the good things, which I'm always in support of. It's just that with Angel, I wish that I just want for him to feel the way he wants Numero Cinco to feel. You know, that's all I want is for him to be able to, like, I want to do good because I want to do good, not because I still am a bit plagued by my history and it still feels like I'm like tallying up my.
Yeah, I feel like he does want to do good because he wants to do good, but like his past is always going to be there. He can't pretend it's not there.
That's valid. That's well put. Mm-hmm. It's almost like you host a podcast.
He's especially Angel. In his feelings now, though, because of the Connor stuff. And I think also the Cordy stuff, really. And that's why he's really in this funk. But like, I think ultimately he does just, he wants to help. Really. And I think we've seen a lot. And that's why I was talking about the personalization of it, because that like always kind of like reaffirmed that part. Like ultimately, that's what really matters to him.
And it was clear in the werewolf episode, like he was really longing for that back and like the connection that he felt with the people they'd help to like have that return to him, which I think is a good sign that like it isn't just, you know, like masochism and like self-torture the way that he does this stuff. But he does do that stuff to himself a lot. He's not Edward Cullen in terms of like how much he hates himself.
He certainly does not sparkle. You know what I mean? There's no glitter in Angel.
I mean, in my mind, he sparkles.
Sparkles from he doesn't need glitter is how Angel
sparkling wit.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? Angel sparkling wit?
He'd love that. He'd love that I said it. Like on a scale of who's a vampire who's really happy, like Harmony to Edward Cullen. he's definitely closer to Edward Cullen, but he's not all the way there.
Oh my god, the spectrum that begins with Harmony and goes all the way to Edward Cullen is fucking hilarious.
It's a spectrum, I believe in. We're all on it.
There is something also hilarious, but I don't want to derail us. I will derail us, but like after the corner.
And I know this is a meta corner. It's a broad strokes corner for me, but I'm okay with the season so far. You know, I'm watching it with you both, so it's like I'm here and I have different feelings about it than I did the first time I watched it, and I very much agree with a lot of the issues that you both have, but I'm still here for it because I love my people that are in the show. The sort of corner that you had about Gunn was a real experience that I had watching this episode when he was like, I finally feel like I have a purpose. I like wanted to flip the table over, like, so just very much feeling that way about like some erasure happening in the lawyer Gunn arc. But I'm here. I don't know what's going to happen. So, you know, I remember enjoying the season a million years ago, and I'm here with you guys to find out what happens next. And you talked about the typo on the business card. Okay, great. Just wanted to make sure that didn't get lost.
Attorney apostrophe S.
The at law belongs unreal. To the attorney. The attorney, actually. It's the theirs. Singular attorney is in ownership of at law.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
Not good.
I care. Thank you, Kristen. You guys. Thank you for having me in this corner. And LaToya, what a fucking delight to get to have you talk about both an episode of Angel and wrestling at the same time.
Aw.
So nice.
Aw.
Kristen's Corner. Kristen's Corner.
So at Fred's lab, it turns out the hero's blood keeps this demon alive. It, like, supercharges him and makes him essentially invulnerable. Spike is like, I can fucking kill him. Everything's got an Achilles heel. Thank you, baby boy. I love you. He's like, I assume the heart's the weakness. And they're like, why? And he's like, it's nothing I see in the science. It's the poetry of it. If it's eating all this, like, these other hearts, I'm going to take its heart, you know?
It's the mythic creature thing, as he says. And, like, this is what Spike is useful for as a team member. Like, he can just cut through the BS of it all and, like, get to something. Like, there's no division for this.
Yeah, like he's not overthinking it. Gunn comes in and is like, that's
Gunn could have gotten this pre-law. This would have been like what Gunn would have done.
Yeah, now the law's gumming up the works. But Gunn comes in, he says he found something. He's like, this, before this guy was a demon, he was a powerful Aztec warrior, and he made a talisman that forged the power of the Aztec sun god to make him super powerful. When he was found out, he was sentenced to death on Day of the Dead. He made a deal with his shaman to bring him back every 50 years to search for the talisman, which is passed down throughout the generations of good dudes. And the talisman was in Numero Cinco's apartment. It was on the altar for his brothers. So, like, we have seen it before. Angel goes to the apartment. The altar's gone.
Yeah.
It's not there. So we go to the cemetery. We see Numero Cinco. He has decorated his brother's joint headstone, as is traditional on this day, you know, with, like, their favorite foods and candles and all of that stuff. He calls out to the demon. Angel shows up. Nice to see Angel in a cemetery again. Something feels good about it to me.
So I think it's, like, the one cemetery they're using this season, because, like, the other time it was, like, when he was there with Spike and the necromancer. I'm like, I'm pretty sure this is, like, the same spot. Like...
Yeah, I think it's the same patch of grass on the lot that they're using.
Come on, guys. So, Buffy gave us variety.
Yeah, come on. So Angel says he calls Numero Cinco out on wanting to die here so he can be with his brothers. And Angel's like, the demon won't kill either of us because we don't have the hearts of champions. Numero Cinco says he is like, yeah, I fucking know that. That's why I swallowed the talismans. This guy will have to cut it out of me.
Angel's like... If there's like my heart's not like working. That's like I'm still a champion, but you know, I'm like you little bitch.
You old bitch.
Yeah, he's like I fucking ate it. Like okay,
smart.
Which also when he reveals he didn't, I'm like no. I feel like the warrior's whole thing is like kind of like a homing beacon for it. So like I feel like he would realize not. You can't just say I swallowed it. Like you'd be like no, what's in the mug?
No, I feel it over there. We begin our next big fight. The guy shows up. He tosses Angel. Angel grabs a part of the wrought iron fence to use as a sword because I guess he didn't bring a weapon to this fight.
bringing nothing to a lucha fight.
Great job. The demon stabs Numero Cinco, and suddenly, I don't know how this happens, but all of the Number Brothers resurrect. Which is cute. They all crawl out of their graves.
Let's pretend it's because he's finally being heroic, I guess, even though he's, like, he's trying to die. He wants the D. And now that these zombie brothers are here, I guess it's time for Fuck Watch.
Fuck Watch.
Who are you fucking?
Once again, no sexual drive. I have not decided who I'm fucking yet, so.
I'm fucking the Number Brothers in the past.
Oh, really?
It's a tag team. Match.
Detect.
Five on one.
Oh, no. Fine, I'm going to go. Kristen. She put in the chat, oh my God, Morgan.
I'm sorry, it's a good bit.
Fine. I'm going to go with the Number Brothers, but the mini versions.
Cute.
Will I ever be horny again on the show?
Who knows?
Although, I mean, Spike getting dangerously close, I think, because I'm enjoying what he's bringing to the table.
Yeah.
Also, Wes, but I'm like, I know, you know, I try to not blow my load and make, like, I try to save these things. And that there's no reason to really cheat. At this point, again, I have no sexual drive watching this.
Yeah, I'm certain there will be an episode where I can pick Wes and be proud of myself for doing so. Okay, that's Fuck Watch.
God. Kristen, you want to fuck anyone? Just to maybe to spice this up?
You want to help us out?
We're floundering here.
Sorry, my microphone was tucked under my chin. I needed a moment. I mean, I think I already picked Gunn.
You did.
And this episode, this is a rough one. Like, you guys are not wrong. It's rough. Especially because Lorne, who I was kind of feeling like a little bit into last episode, wasn't my favorite this episode. So I'm struggling.
Oh, yeah. He's also just in the one scene, I'm realizing.
He's just in the one scene. He's not right. It's not a great scene for him. I mean, I think I would pick Numero Cinco, mostly because I feel like we would have a lot to talk about in terms of what it's like to deliver mail to a large office. It's a job that we both shared. And also because I liked the way he threw Angel through a window.
Yeah. Fair enough.
So I'll pick Numero Cinco, but I don't know how that works with you and your situation, Morgan, but we can talk about it after.
We'll work
it out. A 5-on-2 match.
5-on-2? You want to help me out?
God.
Wow.
I'll tag you
this
in.
This is apparently not a family show.
Children.
Sorry, more wrestling joke.
One day, we'll get me talking wrestling on a Patreon exclusive.
Hell yes.
Fuck Watch.
Back to our app, Angel watches the four Number Brothers have just shown up. They want Angel to join him, and he's like, "Aw, that's nice. This is kind of fun." Like, it's clear he misses being a part of a team, like doing the old Team Angel shit. He's not impressed with their technique. He's like, "You're trying to kill it, not pin it." But then they pin it and kill it, and he's like, "Oh, okay, that does work."
Yeah, and again, they never are like, "Wrestling's fake." Nope, it's real. Look.
Nope. See.
We've been saying this for years.
I know that it's real. I've seen it. So Numero Cinco is dying. And Angel says, "Your brothers are back because you proved you're worthy." And he's like, "The talisman's in the coffee." And he dies. It's sad. And Angel takes the talisman. And the boys all grab their brother. And they carry him back into the grave. And they all fade away. And it's kind of a nice moment that they're all together again. Then at Wes's office, Angel gives the talisman to Wes for safekeeping. Angel says, you know, he's fine. He got the job done. That's what matters. He'll see everyone in the morning. And that Numero Cinco died a hero. Which is nice. And then I see that Fred is wearing a mini skirt. And I write, "Mini skirt, Fred!" with about 20 question marks in my notes. In all caps.
Go on. Or goon, if you will.
I will. Sean William Scott's goon.
Matthew Perry's goon.
I will. Then somewhere else in Wolfram and Hart, Angel grabs the prophecies book. And he asks to read the Shanshu prophecy, the English translation. Maybe he hasn't given up hope after all.
Aw.
The more you know.
Aw. We're really sad.
Yeah, I love my boy. I want him to believe in himself again. I want my friends back.
You've been saying that for a while, haven't you?
I have. I don't know this miniskirt, Fred.
What is this? This is not. No. Mm-mm. She wouldn't just switch to mini skirts. You wouldn't feel comfortable in this new workplace. You're not going to just switch to mini skirts.
I don't know if I'd feel comfortable.
Also, you're in a lab with nerds. Like, they're all.
Old science lab? Like, you don't want your legs out because of. What if you spill a chemical on them?
Again, what man did this? The eternal question. And we always know the answer.
Yeah, we know the answer. Well, now that we've gotten to this place, I do have to ask, is there any episode of the WB you'd recommend that our heroes watch?
Perhaps, perhaps, perhaps.
Angel is a vampire. Does he even like TV?
I think he'll like the WB.
They get
Yeah.
You're also making a coupling reference?
I am.
If you don't make your mind up, we will never get started.
Do, 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 do.
Stephen Moffat. Do, do. He made a half-hour comedy.
Well, he got started in comedy. Like, that wasn't even his first comedy.
I don't like that.
As we all know, you should be able to, you have to pick a side.
Pick a lane, dude.
Yeah, he was a comedy writer who became a dramatic writer. Even one of the great things about the American remake of Coupling, because there are so many.
Oh, yeah.
Is that Lindsay Price isn't just on the show. She sings the cover of Perhaps, Perhaps, Perhaps.
All right, no notes.
One of the many good things about that show.
Woof.
Yeah, it's awful. So obviously, Supernatural 108 Bugs. No, 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 no. really? No. Just to give Angel, and even though, again, wrestling is real, mm-hmm. Angel has established this, just to give them more of a perspective on pro wrestling and, you know, how to really make it in this world and in America. Just watch the WB 2-season series, Nikki, starring Nikki Cox.
Hell yes.
Again, same wrestling coordinator. You get a lot of wrestling people. Like, fucking Macho Man Randy Savage was in an episode.
Sick.
Yeah. This literally, it aired from 2000 to 2002. So, like, right before. Mm. Like, this episode, like, a year before. I'm not saying Nikki's a good show. I'm just saying that you should watch it. Because of everything I've said, literally. I don't really know if this applies too much for our team, but like I'm closing the loop on everything I've said. I've said so much in this episode about wrestling.
You've killed it.
I've murdered it.
I'm dead.
R.I.P. Morgan.
Oh, if only. But that, I mean, that I think about does it for me. I think we left no stone unturned this week, which is pretty good work of us. So if you would like to follow us on social media, you can do so at Angel on Top Cast on both Twitter and Instagram. You can go to angelontop.com if you want to be directed to our Patreon, which is pretty cool. We've got ad-free episodes there, but we also have a bonus pod that LaToya and I are doing called the Cole Turner Cast, where we talk about every episode of Charmed with the main character, Cole Turner, in it. Very weird that he's only in, like, 40 episodes, but...
Yeah, it's also weird. The show waited, like, till the third season to officially start, so...
Very weird. Very interesting creative choice. We talk a lot about that. If you would like to send us an email, because someone did ask today in the DMs if we have an email, and we do. You can email us at angelontoppodcast@gmail.com. But make it good. Make it funny. Please.
This doesn't have to be funny. It could just be like a VHS rip of an episode, which is all we want because we want those commercials, baby.
Yeah, I need a Garnier Fructis commercial, or like, why am I reading this? I'm doing the bass. I'm slapping the bass for the listeners. If you would like to follow me on social media, you can do so at Lorgan Mudich. LaToya, where can the people find you? And should they?
Fine. On Twitter at LaFergs. I'm no longer notable thanks to Elon. Rude. Yeah. Also, again, give us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Say something cool.
Yeah, we love getting nice.
Talk about
there.
How smart I am.
Yeah, talk about how smart LaToya is. That's how dumb I am.
don't do that. That's how we'll know you'll listen to the podcast, that you talk about how smart I am. But yeah. Don't talk about how dumb Morgan is. Don't you dare do that.
Only if you want.
No.
But until next time, you are now leaving Wolfram and Hart, and we do not validate.
Ding, ding.
Beep, beep.
Beep, beep, ribby, ribby.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for Dungeon Masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Get inspired while learning all about the unique planes of existence. Get the in-depth knowledge you need to help your combat encounters feel impactful, or learn about the origins and pantheons of every race and class the game offers. No stone is left unturned as every edition of the game is explored and explained in a way that benefits players of all different levels of experience. You can expand your TTRPG horizons in a way that's as entertaining as it is educational just by listening. All you have to do is go to your favorite podcast app or YouTube and search for The Dungeon Cast.